Hey folks, Tyler from Being This Person here. This intro may be a little bit long, but I know the episode is. And the reason for that is, when I was listening back, doing minor editing as I do, I realized that I set a goal for myself to do 52 of these. So that means one a week for a year of the first set of questions. And this one covered so many of the things that I really wanted to talk about when I started this project that I've held it back a little bit and waited for it to be your 1 year celebration episode, I guess. I don't know. My 1 year. It's my 1 year celebration episode, and I'm glad that you're on this journey with me. It's awesome. Let's have birthday cake. So it is with somebody that I've known for, I don't know, 30 years, and we have one of those take a couple years off and then reconnect like nothing was missing kind of relationships. I love this guy so much. His name is Jeremy. And he, as I said, really talks about some things that I wanted to talk about when I started this project. He is super chill. He had a great space to record in, so going to his house was a benefit because there's a lot less background noise for a change. So also a good reason to throw it out as the 1 year anniversary. But I know you'll love it. I know you'll love all of them because you listen to them. So thank you for listening to them. At this point, folks, I would encourage you to subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us on. It doesn't matter a bit to me. iTunes does seem to own the world, but who cares? Not me. You're here just to listen. I would encourage you, however, to tell a friend. That's the best way. And not just about about this podcast, but about podcasts in general. Help them figure out how to do it on their phone or their whatever device they have. I think it's a very valuable platform, and I will continue to tell you that. I do have an email if you want to contact me. It is beingthisperson@gmail.com. It's all lowercase letters. There's no spaces. It's all spelled correctly. It's a good thing in my world. I do have a Facebook. It is also Being This Person. Again, pretty easy to find. And a website, beingthisperson.com. Not at beingthisperson.com, no spaces, all lowercase letters, all spelled correctly. Again, you can find me all those places. There's stuff going on in those places. I do have a personal Twitter. It is Donus Tyler, DonesTyler, capitalize the D and the T, and it should be pretty easy to find me. I'm getting better at that, and it's been an interesting world lately. At that point, folks, thank you for listening for a whole year. It means something to me. And let's roll the theme music. So first question is, who are you?
The first time I heard the question, name, identity.
Yeah, the name is a
what
good,
do I do?
At least name, okay. But yes, all the rest.
Well, see, in my case, there's a couple names. There's two names, at least, in particular. There's Jeremy, which is what my mom still calls me, and then there's Frog, which is what a lot of other people call me. And then in Eugene, I have to specify, no, I'm not that frog.
Correct. There's another quite locally well-renowned frog in town.
But on in a three-dimensional world, they know that I'm a musician. They don't confuse me with the guy that sells the joke books.
Correct. He's come up before. I mean, he's a local celebrity.
Yeah, it's a name, though.
It is.
But he is a local celebrity.
He's a local celebrity. There's a number of other Jeremys.
Come on, get over it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about irons and we'll get sued. So the first song that I wrote came out of a croaky voice, and it was listen to my voice. I'm a man named Frog, and that's when the name really started sticking, because it had sort of been kind of in the background, just Jeremiah was a bullfrog. That whole running joke. So,
well, and I remember that song, but
it was sung at me when I was very young.
Well, not that song. I also remembered the My Name Is Frog one.
Yeah. Most of the people that I knew in Salem got really sick of it because I was, I wrote it out loud over and over.
Whilst walking.
Yes. I'd been so ill. I'd been coughing for 6 months and I had to get out of the house, and I went to a coffee shop, Daily Planet.
Good chance it was the Beanery, but
no,
I don't know.
No. It was definitely not the Beanery. It was past Safeway from the 12th Street house.
Okay, so yeah, it was the Daily Planet, which was short lived. Yeah.
So I was walking there, and
curious place, had games on books and shit on the shelves. And,
yeah, I didn't spend nearly as much time there as I would have liked. It was interesting. It seemed like a place where an interesting crowd might have developed.
It was very subterranean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, now I thinking about the Salem days, it's just, that's so crazy.
Part of your life.
Yeah. I refer to the 4 years that I spent there doing nothing with music until the end as the years I spent learning to sing the blues.
That's a pretty blues-like thing to say.
In college before that, I'd studied jazz. And, you know, in high school, I did the musicals and choirs and did some of the Latin singing in both high school and college, too.
Latin singing? What?
The Hallelujah, the Hallelujah Chorus was in English. But, sacred
kind
music. Not Latin beats.
As in, yes. Okay.
Not Latin rhythms. Like ancient Latin, do not know me.
Singing cumbia at age six, or.
Yeah. No, I think there was some French and Baroque choir. Yeah, it was. Okay. I was all over the place with the training. Chamber music, and church kind of stuff. Although I never actually sang in a church choir. I think I rehearsed with them once. I may have performed with them once, but I didn't last.
Was the church part cut you down, or was it?
Well, it was. I grew up in that church, and but I was. Well, my mom took me to that church, and then my dad was an atheist who called himself agnostic. I actually refer to my parents as I was raised by a Lutheran librarian and a manic depressive atheist hillbilly genius.
Okay.
Dad was really smart, really angry. Mostly self-educated, but knew his shit pretty well. From the deep rural South, raised in a holy roller religion, and then he rejected it. And coming from the deep rural South, it also was surprising, once I learned the ways of the world, that he was the first person to tell me that racism is bad.
It's frequently tied to religion down there. I'm unclear why religion does that. I'm not going to make any call on that.
I think it's us versus them. I think a lot of things boil down to us versus them thinking. They want to have a group they belong to, and they want to demonize anybody that doesn't belong to their group. It's just kind of a...
I agree with that as a general human,
human
trait.
Pattern.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the religion thing is one of the iterations, I think. It's one of the ways that it's expressed.
So anyhow, back to who you are and enough on the politics and religion and the racisms.
I am Jeremy, a musician, and online I am Frog, also a musician.
A musician.
Yeah, and it's been a weird road to get to the point where that's how I identify. This is musician isn't really who I am, though. It's what I do.
That is commonly brought up with people start to define themselves. But,
who like, I am.
But, I mean, that is definitely at least American, if not Western.
Okay.
Very common trait.
Mm.
Who are you? One of the first things you'll do is you'll start talking about what you do for a living or what your job is. If
some people will talk about who their family is.
Yeah, that's the other real common one is I'm a brother, father, sister, mother, whatever it is.
Son of, grandson of.
Then there's those very few that go existential straight out of the gate.
I am a being of light.
Exactly.
Who is attempting to create harmony in the world around him.
I like it.
Harmony. That's something that I've been really focused on lately, is just trying to harmonize with my surroundings and find people I can harmonize with. And not necessarily in a musical way, but I enjoy that it's a musical metaphor. Have you ever learned much about string theory?
I know a fair amount, yes.
Okay.
I'm not super well-versed. Right
I got to a certain point, and then my mind exploded. So if everything is made up of these little strings that are vibrating at certain frequencies, does that mean that the universe is made of music?
Well,
and if it is, shouldn't harmonizing be one of our major goals?
So being there's a lot of talk against string theory.
Okay.
Your
is there no
approach option? Still works.
Okay. Though,
because everything has a vibrational tone or a vibrational pattern to it. And so literally light has a sound that can be attributed to it.
Okay.
That is a thing.
Okay.
Period.
That doesn't surprise
me. To the best of human knowledge.
Like I said, my mind has been blown enough times that I can hear something
that
makes no sense to me, and I can immediately go, okay.
That's one of the explanations for the sound color synesthete, for instance.
Say that again.
A sound color synesthete. Do you know
sound? Synesthete?
Yeah. So
really?
That's one of the explanations. The possible explanations is that
interesting. So they're actually
process the frequency both ways.
Wow.
Now,
that's.
I mean, that's just
that,
like
that. See, that now once again, my mind has been
crap
blown
I probably
because
saw on
synesthesia is fascinating.
Yes,
yeah. And understanding that is definitely going to be, I think, a push forward in the way we understand the brain. So like you're saying that synesthetes are able to process the frequency of the light that gives it the sound, and
which is why they can associate color and sound so reasonably. I mean, seriously, dude, it is something I saw or on a half-hour TV show, or read a blurb in a magazine.
I love that knowledge is just like,
but it's out there, and I can snap onto those things.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's
I just look forward to the day where it's harder to get false information out there. It's just fact checking is I think, one of the highest, noblest things that people can do in this world.
Agreed. Not coming soon to an internet near you, just so that you know. That may be a pessimistic sounding statement, but I really don't think it's coming anytime soon.
I keep coming back to this. I forgot. I told you about my elder friend with the disability. Yes. A phrase, what was it? I had it, and I was like, be the change in the world that you want to see.
Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi.
Is that who said it first? Or, who's, or maybe who it's attributed to?
It's either Gandhi or the Dalai Lama.
So I've kind of reached the point, anytime I hear anybody say something negative or pessimistic about something, my back of my head, you know, I usually manage to filter it out, but back of my head, I always want to ask, well, what are you doing to change it? If you got a problem with this, what are you doing to change it? Even just like, instead of just being negative and fatalistic, maybe speak about an issue and that you're and be passionate about how you think that positive change might come about.
I absolutely agree with you. It's something that I do in my life, is that so, I do try and affect change. But I'm very much an act personally and try and
think
I don't want to be like a holy person kind of example. I just want to generally be a decent human being and try and help people understand that the yield sign means let's let the cars zipper together. Like, I try and encourage that kind of behavior without being
so
a dick.
Why isn't that considered holy? Why isn't just being kind in the little things considered being holy?
It is a more...
I just read this. I both love and hate Facebook. It is a
state of our world.
It is a social arena to some degree. But I love that there are groups like Thich Nhat Hanh. People are posting stuff related to that. And I think one of the quotes of his was something about, people talk about the miracle of walking on water. What I think is a miracle is walking on the earth peacefully every day. I completely screwing up the quote, but that's the gist that I got out of it. That's what I got out of it. And I'm not even going to say I'm accurately paraphrasing it. I'm just saying that's what I got out of it. I think I'm close. I think peacefully is the word that I'm questioning in my head. But that, like I said, the gist. Everyday acts of kindness are, I think, more divine. Closer to it.
Well, it's a common trait in whatever holy figure you put, at least in most monotheistic cultures. So be it the Allah path, the Buddha path, the Christ-like path, etc. That is a trait that comes in all of them, is trying to walk through the world peacefully and with grace.
Yeah. I think a lot of it boils down to, if you're going to make a choice, make the kind one.
Yeah. I don't know. The kind choice isn't always what elicits peace.
Well, I think defining what the kind choice means is one of the really important areas of discussion. But I think if we start at that point, if we start at, we're going to make the kind choice, the greatest good for the greater number, is sometimes the kinder choice. Sometimes you want to take care of the individual over the group. There's a line somewhere in there. And that's, so I think sometimes I think of myself as a philosopher and who tries to be a poet, or a poet who tries to be a philosopher, or I'm just dreaming I'm a butterfly. No, I'm a butterfly dreaming I'm an idiot.
That is one thing I've always seen in you, though, is that you do kind of chase some more philosophical thought.
I can't help it.
And try and find ways lost. To put it out.
I get lost in that stuff. And I think it, and I really think it has been, I've been trying to boil it down, you know, try to find those essential concepts with as few words as possible. My elder friend had a project for many years, where he was, it was a pledge. He wanted people to take a pledge to, I promise to take part in only actions that require that no one suffer harm. I think was as close as I can come to remembering it. And he said it was, they worked hard on the wording of that. So, but, just that idea of, do no harm. And I get so mad at Aleister Crowley. do what thou wilt should not be the whole of the law. It's, and it harm none.
He said,
"Do what thou wilt."
No, he said that. Tell us, that's in the Golden Dawn treatise.
Really? He did say the whole thing, or did he just say
that's part of the whole deal?
Okay, because I was
do what thou wilt.
I always heard that he was the one that said, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law."
I mean,
that's what I heard he said.
Possible he has said. I mean, like,
okay,
he did a lot of cocaine. Okay,
is that what was going on?
Oh yeah, like all those guys back.
I don't know a whole lot about the
Freud
depth of it.
And those guys high as shit.
Wait, did they hang out?
No, they were just. I mean, like
contemporary
information. I incorrect use of the word contemporaries. In fact, I don't think they even
in the same era.
Yeah, I think it was they similar eras and similar cracks in the way humans were constructing their mind.
I don't. Okay, I need to look into.
But yeah, I mean,
where
shit.
I got that
so, I mean,
idea.
He probably said a lot of crazy. Yeah. I know he said a lot of crazy stuff, but it is my understanding that in the Golden Dawn Treatise, which is one of the major organizations, or the ODO, is also another one that he was in, that it is there is some clause in there, like, don't beat people up while you're doing what you want to do.
I think I surfed the surface of too many deep topics. So I get this impression, somebody tells me this is what was said, mm-hmm. and then I hold on to that. Because my brain just holds on to stuff, just like grabs stuff, and I remember things. Like I told you, how I remembered being in your red Mustang and hearing "I will not take these things for granted" for the first time. And
the song is so amazing.
I'm pretty sure it made me cry. And that was weird to be hanging out with this dude in a leather jacket in a red Mustang listening to this song. Like, he just thinks I'm so unmanly now. I'm just going to pretend I'm not crying.
Oh, dude. He just hadn't picked up on the vibe yet. I'm clearly not a guy who's going to condemn you for that.
You had this, like, 50s greaser kind of energy.
With a little bit of Northwest grunge thrown in, yeah. I did. But run around a leather jacket in the 65 Mustang
in
the early 90s.
I got my black leather biker jacket when I was working as a prison guard for juvenile corrections.
Right. Which we can talk about as long as we don't use names of the place. Because HIPAA law.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So
I learned that one.
Nice.
I had to go do some editing.
Nice. Yeah, that was insane that I worked that job. that was not the first weird job I had. I was assistant to a casting agent for like a couple months. He did like modeling / casting stuff here in Eugene.
That sounds creepy in a town this size.
He was.
That sounds like
he
creepy
was.
Guy.
He was. I found out later that he liked to hire young men. He never tried anything with me. And then I think I went to summer camp and came back and he'd hired somebody else. But some guys I knew in college apparently had also worked for him at some point.
Yeah, that really is creepy.
Yeah, so, but what's really funny is that I later saw him in a commercial for a local rehab clinic as somebody who had been...
Somebody who'd been through it.
Yeah. So I'm not sure.
Thickens.
But he was, he was in the acting end of things, so it could have been an acting job. It would totally make sense, but also it would have made sense if he'd been through it, I think. So I don't know. A lot of things are up in the air like that.
So did you go directly from that casting job into the Insane Asylum, for lack of a better word?
No, I mean, it really I worked at the pizza parlor where we where I met our bass player friend. I worked there for about a year, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and then through a theater production at that theater, that the live theater that was across the street from the cafe where we used to hang out.
Live theater. It was a closet.
I did.
But anyway,
I did 5 different plays in the space of 6 months when I first got to Salem. And that was exhausting.
Well, you were also working at a pizza joint. You had all the time in the world outside of work.
Yeah, yeah. But but still, to work a full-time job and do that. Because five plays in 6 months, a lot of overlap was happening. So I did not have a lot of free time. I burned out hard. But in one of the last shows that I did, I met an administrator and an employee of the juvenile corrections facility. And they told me about it. And I was 21 at the time. And I thought, oh, maybe I can help some kids. I was very idealistic.
You might still be a little idealistic.
Right. What a lot of people tell me. Had a conversation with somebody who said they were an idealistic pragmatist, and I told them I was a pragmatic idealist. I can't remember. We might have swapped. But, yeah, so I interviewed and somehow got hired and got to carry handcuffs.
And have chairs thrown at you and fun things.
No,
like that.
No. The one time that I saw a kid, charge.
Violently lash out.
Not really violently lash out. He just charged somebody. There was just a minor little altercation. And my coworker was a little annoyed that I didn't pull the alarm pin on the... We wore these things on our belts. We called it a grenade. And you pull the pin and it sends a signal to a sensor in the room. And then they know to send all the security there. Yeah. It was... Yeah.
It's a curious situation.
It
does kind of lead us into the next question, too.
Okay.
Which is, why? As in, why are you who you are?
Oh, man.
And going through experiences.
I had a bit of a violent childhood. My dad was angry, and it spilled out onto the rest of the family, and it trickled down from my mom to my brother and I, and from my brother down to me. So I was like the bottom of the chain of this dysfunction. And I realized that I didn't want anybody to feel about me the way I felt about the people who took their anger out on me. And I think that was the beginning of pacifism and of wanting to be kind. Wanting to make the kind choices. It's not that much harder to be kind, I don't think. It just takes a little bit of awareness and a willingness to act on awareness.
I agree with you, but is it okay if I poke at that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely.
So, like, what kind of behaviors were you trying to not share with the rest of the world or modify in yourself, and how were you going about all of that that helped build you into the person that you are?
When, let's see, where to start? I don't remember it, but the children's theater that I ended up sort of growing up with, I did about, from the time I was about 8 till I was 18.
Right.
3 shows a year. And the director, though, told me that she kicked me out for a year because I got in a fight with a kid. And so I had anger issues. I had a lot of anger issues.
Do you remember that?
I sort of do. There was I sort of remember a tussle, like getting physical with a kid. I don't remember why. I don't remember what was happening. But I definitely had some inappropriate responses. When I was about 13 or 14, I think, a friend of mine told me that the way actually step back a little further. I thought I was repulsive. I thought there was something wrong with me that made people pull back from me. And I found, eventually, a friend finally told me that the way I walked and my expression and my body language and my tone of voice just sort of said, I'm going to hurt the next person that talks to me. And I was shocked. I was like, I didn't, that's not who I was in my head. So it was really surprising to find out that that's what I was projecting. I was going somewhere with that. I do this a lot.
It gets worse the older I get, man. I gotta tell you, the more gray I have in my face and head, the more it happens like that. And the more I need my spectacles for whatever job I'm doing, the more it happens like that. But we were talking about
anger.
What things you were trying to change and not share with the world, and how
my anger. That was the biggest one. When I was 15 or 16, I think it was 15, I had been skipping a lot of school and sort of in the process of dropping out. And I was probably dealing with a depressive episode. I think by that point, both my father and brother were out of the house, so no longer had the abusers in the house. So I had a suicidal thought, and I recognized that as wrong and as a problem. So I went and talked to a counselor. I went ahead and actually went into the school and talked to a counselor.
Like one thought?
Well, it was, am I going to bother? No, it was like, it wasn't just like maybe I should. It was, why should I bother trying to catch up on all the homework I'm behind on? I'm just going to kill myself anyway. And it was just that it was like just a matter of fact, like, whoa, where did that come from? Like that, it was, I knew it wasn't right. I knew that's, so I went and talked to somebody, and just sharing that helped a lot. But then I got involved in a program for adolescents coping with depression. And I learned social skills, communication skills, negative thought stopping skills. And the one I've still been working on is pleasant event scheduling. And at the same time, my mother got to learn some of the same communication skills that I was learning. And it really helped us a lot to be able to communicate. And I think it gave me some really valuable, a toolkit, basically, to address a lot of the issues. I've done a lot of other reading, research, counseling, therapy, talking to shamans and druids, talking to crazy people that I'm still convinced might have been some kind of divine spirits.
So there with you on that one. I have spent this weird evening in this alleyway with this total stranger sharing a bottle of liquor, but I somehow feel like he doesn't actually exist and is going to walk into the clouds soon.
The piano player that I work with, I'll call him Jay.
Yeah. Well, also a lifelong friend.
Yeah. Brother. He's more my brother than my brother. I've known him since we were six. 42 years, at least, we've known each other. Damn it. I wasn't going to talk about him. So, when we were in high school...
He's a character in your story.
Absolutely, absolutely. He is, when we were in high school, he took a television class, and as part of that television class, he ended up being the person who on Friday nights would sit in a little room at the cable access station and put the tape in the machine and press play to send it out over the broadcast.
Hmm.
It was working the head end, is what they called it. And so I would
back
hang out
in the
with
day him. When that was a job.
Yeah. What, back before it was automated, exactly. Yeah. This would have been...
people are going to listen to this by clicking a flat screen, and it's just going to magically happen.
This would have been back in like 87, 88.
Wow. 80, okay, yeah.
88.
That's right. Yeah.
Probably. And so for a while, that head end room was moved into a city hall building. And so it overlooks the Free Speech Plaza, okay. That room. And we would be in that building when nobody else was there. He had a key. And he would put in a show, and if it was an hour show, we'd go and to Arby's or something and get... I just remember the cheesy curly fries.
Right.
Yeah, bleep out the name of that company.
No, whatever.
Anyway,
that's what it is.
So when
I'll say it more often if they pay me. But
we got back, we were just about to leave, and he was shutting things down, and I was in the outer office, and I look up, and there's this man standing there with this big plastic garbage bag full of, I think it might have been a sleeping bag, it might have been other stuff. It was his
most
bag.
Likely his possessions.
His possessions, and he was just kind of swaying, and he said, "Is this a police station?"
No, it's a courthouse. Frankly,
no. So he thought he told us he thought there was a warrant for him, and he wanted to turn himself in. And so we called the cops, and they said, "Nah, he's probably just looking for three hots and a cot."
Yeah.
And they wouldn't come get him. I don't know if we specified. We are in a city building. He came through. We must have left the door unlocked. He walked in. He should not be here. but we didn't. We were 17, and we didn't like push that. So
I mean, I could see why somebody, especially a traveler, or somebody who's a little out of their gourd for a little while, for whatever reason, would see that and think it might be a police station. It is a courthouse.
We were 17, station. And I was not particular. I may have been clean cut. I went through a lot of like
phases.
Well, I grew up in the theater. I grew up doing theater, and so I'd grow my hair out until I knew what the role that I was going to play would require, and then I would cut my hair appropriately. But so, in between, it would be just like
whatever was a mop. Yeah, in between. Yeah,
it would just be a mop. But so we told him, no, the cops don't want you. And said, well, maybe you can give me the mission. And so we're like, okay, well, Jay was going to pay for a cab. And so we're standing on the street corner, and Jay realizes he either realizes he didn't have his wallet or that he didn't have enough in his wallet. He went off. I'm standing there alone with this guy. I'm going to say his name, the only name that I know for Jerry.
Okay.
He's just standing there kind of swaying. Just,
yeah, chances are finding Jerry's going to be a little different.
And yeah, and I'm just, what was my dad's name too?
Oh.
And he's no longer with us, so no signature will be required. standing there. He's just sort of swaying there, and I'm standing there alone with him, and I'm like, okay, Jesus, oh my God, I can't, what is going on? And he just looks at me and he says, if I don't fall over flat on my face in a minute here, I'll be doing just fine. And that is some of the deepest wisdom I have ever heard in my life.
There's a lot of truth.
If I don't fall flat on my face in a minute here, I'll be doing just fine. So long as you got your feet under you and you're still like in control of your verticality.
Nice word. I like it. And you're right. It is very true. As long as you kind of have a grasp on your reality and you're at least nosing the plane toward flying like pattern, you're going to be okay.
So as for why, I'm just trying to figure it out. And by it, I mean everything. Just I feel sometimes like if reincarnation is a thing, I spent my last few thousand lifetimes alternating between being a cat and being a dolphin. I haven't been a human in a really long time, and it really just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me most of the time. Why people are the way they are. It's just... especially the ones that really want to work really hard to defend their ignorance. Like, there'll be a fact. And they are, for some reason, are refusing to accept the fact. And you try to explain why the fact is the fact. And they just work so hard to not accept that fact. There's a book I really need to read. And it's called I'm Right and You're an Idiot. But it's about toxic discourse, the state of toxic discourse in modern society and how to fix it. So the title might not be the
right. How to fix it is a bold claim.
I know, okay. It is. That's why I really need to read this book. Because, yeah, we need to remember how to talk to each other. But a lot of it depends on the leaders remembering to not vilify the other side, the us versus them. It's we are all us. We're all in this together. And that's why I'm so glad to hear about the Supreme Court allowing the children's environmental case to go forward.
Did it go forward?
I
the climate change. All right. So a little back history. Just because it'll be definitely out of the news because I'm months ahead on this. But a quick back history is some high school age children in our town, Eugene, Oregon, United States of America, decided to sue the United States government over the fact that the factors that have caused climate change, having been under their control for the most part over all these years, has infringed upon these children's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because pursuing happiness in a dark and hot and hell-like world...
Well, and life.
...is not going to be a happiness. So what comes of it or not will be seen, or maybe, who knows, they may just bury it in litigation forever.
It's an interesting
development. It did go through...
I think they basically said we're not going to deny their right to press this case forward. Try it. And I think it did start here in Eugene, but I think it's grown.
Well, yeah, it started here in Eugene, and because it's a federal case. They took it to the federal, the small federal court. I don't know if it's, I don't know enough about the system.
Yeah.
But the local federal court, and they said, well, we don't want to do this. And so there was like an injunction, and the kids fought, and they left school. Well, it was, I'm sure, just a good reason to walk out of high school.
Yeah.
But they went down, and a number of college people got involved, and a number of local citizens got involved. And they've been pushing, and it is ultimately pushing at the federal level. They're just doing it here in town.
Interesting.
I mean, which is why we hear it on our statewide news.
Was it Rally for the Children? There was an event not too long ago, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. There are so many topics to just it's overwhelming sometimes. I've been taking a lot of media breaks lately. Just like completely ignoring the news for days on end, if I can.
I've actually been going the other way, in all honesty.
I've gone both ways. Actually, while I was out of the country, I spent a lot of time on Reddit,
which is kind of anti-news.
Well, but it links to other news stories. It links to other journalistic entities.
Curious rabbit hole of a world.
It is. But I was reading all the mainstream news through that filter. Because I'm always interested in seeing what people are saying about that kind of thing. And Reddit definitely has its own bent. But it's interesting.
It's definitely a slanted version of
it. But it's interesting how different subreddits have different bents.
Absolutely. Different social cliques on the street.
I'm deeply disappointed to see subreddits that claim to be Bernie Sanders supporters that seem to be parroting what seem Russian propaganda type attitudes.
There's been a lot of connections drawn.
Yeah, it's insane what's going on in the world.
That say, yet again, even your other side isn't another side.
Yeah.
I'm going to press pause.
Oh.
And we're back with the next question, because there's no point in trying to remember where we were. Although I kind of do.
I was thinking about it again during the break, about the why I am who I am. That's the question, right?
That was the question we were
looking at. Trying to make sense and trying to be better. That's... And healthier. And by better, I mean healthier. And
by sense, you mean trying to make sense of what?
Why so much of the world doesn't seem to make sense to me. And the way things are just confuses me. Because I'm not. I don't even want to go into all that, because that's a whole other.
Clearly, what you're trying to make sense of, apparently.
Exactly. Why we focus on that us versus them thing, rather than recognizing that if we all work on it together, then everybody can be okay. Instead of that, it doesn't have to be us versus them. That's a choice that got made.
And there's always a me versus everybody else in the world question.
Well, see,
that's where it originates.
If we start thinking about it in terms of we are all us, then we can recognize that, yes, humans are still have fragile egos, and sometimes those egos do not work with the we are all us thing. It's you got to think things through before you implement any kind of system. And we didn't do that. We're stuck with a system that we just kind of happened.
Oh, no. Absolutely, they did. The founding fathers of not just this country, but this Western breed of thought.
Yeah.
Or any other country, and their whatever basis breed of thought, did think it through to the best of their ability, given
the
things they had at that time.
To the best of their abilities,
and
given the things that they had at
that time.
Exactly. Yes.
And I don't know if anybody else looked, but over the last couple hundred years, humanity has changed
so much.
So much. In comparison, just like the accelerated rate that we're progressing is insane. And so, yeah, it's more of that like we were talking long before we even press recorded the first time. Yeah. It's more that our technology is driving us in ways that we don't understand. That
well, the way I put it, oh God, 20 some years ago, I had this thought: we are too technologically advanced for as philosophically retarded as we are. We don't know what the hell we're doing, and we're playing with these big, giant things, and we're just... I really like the idea of teaching philosophy to younger students. Apparently, there have been studies that are showing that helps with critical thinking. It just has all these different benefits in later life.
By offering it at a remedial level. I mean, yeah. You're not going to... start in front of somebody and say, "Here,
yeah,
read this secondary."
No. I mean, you start them off with obviously you age appropriate introductions into these, but still, I mean, it boggles my mind that like Christian organizations will complain about the Zen ideas being taught to their children because they obviously don't understand what Zen is. It's not their lack of understanding.
It's their hard and fast belief in the system that they've been indoctrinated with.
Their system is the only right one, yeah.
And that happens the other way around as well, unfortunately.
Yes. I was amazed to find out that there are extremist Buddhists.
Mm-hmm.
That boggled my mind. I it's all about interpretation. It's how that brings me back to when interpreting things like that, you have choices. Always make the kind choice. That's if we just focus on that, then oh my God, so many of the things that we have problems with would just be just that one simple thing. Make the kind choice, and then you won't have oppression. You won't have yeah, I think that's the main thing that we won't have. Because everything else boils down to
boil
that.
It down.
everything else boils down to some form of oppression.
I would argue that it boils down to some form of fear, and oppression generally comes out of fear. But that's just due to the lack of understanding. Fear comes from lack of understanding. When you understand something, it is much more difficult to be afraid of it. And that works for volcanoes as well as people who have different cultural belief systems than you do. Once you understand it, or at least spend time with it and do your effort to understand it. It is much more difficult to be afraid of it.
That is exactly
not afraid of it. It is much more difficult.
That is
to
exactly
try
where.
And oppress
have
it.
You heard of Daryl Davis? No. This man is on Wikipedia. He's definitely a celebrity of a type. He is a black blues musician. Who has...
Oh, yes, I do know this man. Who's collected clan robes. I brought him up in this podcast before.
People.
He is one of my favorite
people.
My favorite people.
Exactly.
To just kick it back in for anybody really quickly, it's this black musician who was approached by a white guy, and the story goes, in a bar, the story goes that this white guy says, "You're the first black man I ever see play like Jerry Lee Lewis," and this black man... says, "Well, you know where Jerry Lee Lewis would learn to play, right?" and it sparks a conversation. And a lot of time passes, and eventually that Klansman was inviting him to, this black man, to Klan rallies. And said some things like, "I like you white N-words less than I like this one over here," in speeches, and it's a beautiful thing. You can hear
I hadn't heard that part.
Yeah, I think there's a Moth podcast on it. I know it's on Snap Judgment. He's all out, but the guy's been out there, and he's now collected, I think, 6 or 8 different Klan's robes and upper up Klansmen, and has shut down. There is no longer a Klan in Maryland because
because of Daryl.
Yeah, every once in a while, somebody tries to kick one off and it fails dramatically very quickly. And yeah, he's one of my favorite fucking people. I love that guy.
Yeah,
just his name is very difficult. It doesn't stick with me, but you start the story. So, I clearly am there.
Yeah, so he just asked them questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can you hate me? You don't know me.
He just had a conversation with him.
Yeah. And once they knew him, they couldn't be afraid of him anymore. And they and that's that thing.
Develop understanding, and it's much more difficult to oppress something that you understand.
Depends on the person about that.
So I'm going to move you to the next question.
Okay.
I'm going to quit talking about sociology. For just a second, I'm sure we'll get back to it. The next question is, what makes you unique? Because we're kind of into some of that already.
That's a hard one for me, because I've worked really hard to focus on what we have in common more. At least that's my conscious effort. I'm like, don't think of yourself as unique. Don't put yourself on a pedestal. Don't do all that kind of stuff. Just like in conversations I've had with people over the last couple months, some of them have told me that apparently a lot of the stories that I've told have been about suffering and going through hard shit in my life. And I guess the fact that I keep getting up, back up, and keep trying to move forward when I lost a job and 3 days later met a guitarist that said he wanted to take me to Sedona, I said, I think this... the idea of leaving my hometown and just traveling scares me a lot. So that probably means I should do it. And then when I was in Arizona, I met a woman from Holland who was going to travel to Mexico. And the first time we hung out together, we wrote a song together. And she said, well, my visa waiver's running out. I have to leave the country and I'm going to go travel as a musician in Mexico for a while. And I said, well, can I come with you? Because I think, once again, it scared me. And also, I was trying to get out of that town. I wanted to get back to Eugene, but I just wanted to get out of that. I just didn't like the life that I was...
Sedona, to some extent, is a sister city of Eugene.
I know. But it was like...
I've never felt comfortable anywhere in Arizona.
It was like Eugene was...
Nothing against Arizona.
It's interesting that you should say that. Because I've never heard anybody else like make that connection between Eugene and Sedona.
Oh,
but
totally it is. I mean, like in Arizona, it's where the hippie dippy people live.
Yeah,
just like Eugene in Oregon is where the hippie dippy people. I mean, again, no offense to hippie. I'm the, clearly actually, one
actually,
of the hippie dippy.
When I was leaving Eugene to go to Sedona, somebody told me, "Watch out for the Newagers." And I'm like, "What are the Newagers? What are you talking about?" I take it you're familiar with that pronunciation of New Agers.
Yeah, yeah. It's the person who's going to sell you some rocks and perform some Reiki. I mean, again, all power to rocks and Reiki. But
so it reminded me of Eugene of 15 years ago. But I have to specify that I was there in 1999, so I was thinking about 1985. Eugene of 1985. I guess being willing to do things that other people wouldn't... I spent the last 2 years in New Zealand for crying out loud.
It sounds like a willingness to jump out of your comfort zone.
There we go. That's probably very much the. It's not so much a willingness to jump out of my comfort zone. It's I think I've worked really hard to have my comfort zone contained within my skin. Let's see, was Arizona? Arizona was after I was homeless. So I was homeless when I was about 25. And I think that changed my idea of security, of you know, being secure in where you're at. There's part of me that is just painfully aware of how easy it is to lose that security. And there's a part of me that is has also become aware that I'll probably be okay.
So far, so great.
No matter what. From the time I was 12 till I was somewhere in my 20s, I did not have good Christmases until one morning, one time I woke up and through a process reached a point where I decided I could be thankful that I had always had a roof over my head and I always knew where my next meal was coming from. And that I was thankful for that, and that was how I had my first good Christmas since I was 12. And then I lost that. I reached a point in my life where a couple months I did not have a roof over my head, unless I could convince somebody to let me crash on their couch or
theirs.
Yeah, and that did not always happen. And that was more rare. Because I had a dog that got me kicked out of every place. His name was Lupe, and he only spoke Spanish. And I met him, and the lady said, "This dog goes with you or he goes to the pound." And that was how I started being homeless, because the dog got me kicked out of everywhere. I still don't speak Spanish. I spent, I think, at least two months in Mexico. But I was traveling with a Dutch lady who was very fluent, and she was translating. So I can say discúlpame, which is excuse me, más despacio, which is more slowly.
But the dog doesn't care about either of those words.
No, for him it was siéntate, which is sit, and ven aquí, which is come here. And those are the only... Yeah, I think those were the only ones. There might have been arriba, but I found out later that means upstairs.
Doesn't it mean faster?
I know.
Huh. I mean, my Spanish isn't great. I know, but to my understanding, the translation is faster.
Speedy Gonzalez really just, I don't think he was a very good teacher. I don't think he was a reliable source.
All right, so when's the last time a heavily racist character was a good teacher? let's just toss that into the mix real quick.
There's a bluebird on my shoulder. It's the truth. It's actual. Everything is satisfactional. Mm-hmm. I was in a choir that sang that
speaking
early 80s.
Speaking of super racist characters.
Exactly.
God bless Uncle Remus.
I know. I didn't see it. I mean, I was taught to be that racism was bad at a very young age. But I didn't see all that stuff that
neither did culture.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot of time and a lot of people's voices to move forward and say, no, okay, now that we've got that one a little under control, this now hurts. Like, it's just we're curing the biggest wound first and moving on to the next ones. And sooner or later, maybe we'll have people who aren't wounded.
Yeah. And what we need to... the message that I think that needs to be spread is just because these people are being given the same rights that you've always had does not mean you are now being oppressed.
It also doesn't mean that just giving them the same rights brings them to an equal level.
Exactly.
But I mean, the good thing about that is, well, good and bad. Is that the divide between rich and poor is becoming greater, and that is becoming less and less color discriminant. And so a lot of the people who have been stuck in places because of the history that put them there are getting people who are more privileged because of their birthright, or their birth genetic. Birthright's the wrong word, but that's, you understand what I mean. Because of their genetics, they've got a few more privileges. So now there's people on both sides of the fence that are fighting against this smaller and smaller group of people. And come on, man, we got to look at the hive and realize that the queen's in charge. She needs to be taken down. Time to kill her and build a new one. And that's what bees do. And
if we're talking about eating the rich.
Yes,
kind of. Okay, because that's what I'm all for. I'm all for eating the rich.
So
they need to be reabsorbed. Wealth gathering is an addiction. It's an addictive process. After a certain point, all that money is good for is making more money, and all that does is take more money out of everybody else.
You lose track of what the bettering yourself is. There is a level, but
yeah. So yeah, it needs to come back into the
balance. Needs to be a little better. So back to you, though.
Dennis Moore, Monty Python sketch, the guy that steals the lupins.
Oh yes.
Dennis Moore, riding through the land. Dennis Moore without a Maryland band. Of course, by this point, he's stolen everything from the rich and given it all to the poor. So the previously rich are now poor, and the poor were now rich. Dennis Moore, steals from the poor, gives to the rich, stupid bitch, is how it ends.
We don't want any more lupins.
We don't want
We can't even eat lupins.
He made amazing recipes from lupins.
So, all right. So next question is, will you tell me about a defining moment?
The first thing that popped in my head, it was Valentine's Day. And I was walking these back paths with this guy named Jeremy. Seriously.
We're not talking imaginary friend. No. Took too many hits of acid. Any of that. Like, there's another real physical being.
I think I met that Jeremy when I was coming down off of...
Was it the tall Jeremy who used to have the bleached hair?
No. Dark hair. Shorter Jeremy. He was local to Eugene.
Okay.
He had a crush on a waitress at some restaurant. We either were going there or were coming from there, back paths in Springfield. It's late at night. As we're walking, these kids are walking past us, laughing and looking back and yelling at somebody behind them. And we walk up, and there's this guy standing in the middle of the path, and he's got this big rock in his hand. And he's pissed. And we found out later that he was planning on bashing in the head of the next person he met because it was Valentine's Day, he was drunk, his old lady had kicked him out for being drunk, and those kids had just been messing with him. And so he was just like, he was ready to just, he didn't care who it was, he just was angry and he wanted to hurt somebody. And I was the bigger, I was the taller, so he was focused on me. I'm not a fighter, Jeremy was. I could see out of the corner of my eye that he was ready to jump in. So I'm like, okay, he's got my back. We just started talking, and the story came out, and we just kept talking. And previous to that, I had written a song about laying my anger down, and we talked about the anger. I had the anger. I inherited the anger.
Or it was taught to you, either way. It came into you.
Well, I either inherited it through nature or through nurture. Or both.
Okay, that's a better delineation than I made. I interrupted just to screw your story up.
I inherited this anger. So I wrote a song. I called it Emotional Alchemy. I think I got that concept from a book called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. Turning anger to joy, laugh out of our rage. Why can't we all just get along? It's possible, practical, best for us all. That's the theme of this peacemonger song. So I sang that song for the angry man. And when we left him, he was singing us a song. So in my process of trying to heal my own anger, I met a man that was angry and helped him transform that moment, that angry moment, into some joyousness. And I would call that a defining moment.
Do you remember what song he was singing?
Not a clue. Some country shit.
Okay. Could have been making it up on the spot for all you know.
I have a vague recollection of maybe recognizing it, but that could just be, I mean, this was, oh God. Before the turn of the century, I think. So.
Almost two decades.
Yeah. Actually, it would have been around 97, maybe. So probably more than 20 years ago.
Yeah, 1998 is 21 years ago.
Yeah.
I know because my kid turns 21 really soon. Like, I have that a good solid measure that has not quit living yet.
When I first started looking at the podcast, he's like the second or third?
Something like that, yeah.
I was just looking at the names and I saw that he was one of them. Oh, that's the one I'm going to listen to
first. It's undistinguishable. Like, you read the name and yeah, you know exactly what
well,
it is.
Yeah, because he's a great kid.
He's something else.
What's that?
He's something else. He's absolutely something else.
I hadn't seen him for I don't know how long. He was maybe between 10 and 13 when I gave him those guitar lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he saw me at that party, he was just like, "Hey, it's you." And like, I think he gave me a hug and he's like, "You're my friend." And just like, cool.
You changed his world, man.
He was already beyond me as a student. He was already past me as a guitarist.
And it's not just that. It's with a lot of things.
Well,
it's a reason to push yourself into practice. And that practice can be guitar in this case.
Yeah.
But it can be the practice of making a kind decision in the case that you've mentioned a couple of times. Or the practice of a little bit of self-care. Because everybody needs that. Uh-huh. And sometimes you need a way to push yourself into that. So maybe your self-care is you have a friend and you and your friend go to spa day or go hiking or whatever it is that you mm-hmm. don't do.
I talked about the things that I learned in that course for adolescents coping with depression. Mm-hmm. And that last one, pleasant event scheduling. That's what you're just talking about right there.
Kind of, yes.
It's a self-care kind of thing.
I'm moving the last question then, because that defining moment kind of stands with no question.
it was you know, make the kind choice, because those kids hadn't, and I did by talking to the guy. I mean, he obviously there was something going on for that guy, and it he demanded attention, and he was just this raw gaping wound in reality, just sitting in front of me. And I've hurt, and I've been hurt, and I know that I've hurt others, and I've always regretted that every time. People have tried to tell me that I'm an empath, and I'm like, I don't know what if paranormal abilities exist, but the way I see it is I when I studied to be an actor and when I studied body language to try to fix my own so I wasn't projecting anger towards people, I learned a little bit how to read body language and pick up on subtle cues that tell me what their emotions are. And I'm not empathetic, which is if I know that somebody is feeling something, I feel a little bit of that too. Like if I know somebody's sad, that makes me sad. And it's a spectrum, the way people react to other people's emotions around them. And, you know, being around happy people is nice, but for me, sometimes the reason behind their happiness is going to be like, can I be happy with them for that reason? Or should I...
tough to be happy at a Klan rally.
Oh, yeah, that would, yeah, yeah.
That's a little extreme version, but that's kind of where you're at, is like, can I be happy for that reason?
I can't, but it's weird, though, because I can't be happy for somebody being happy about somebody else's suffering, but God, I love slapstick comedy. So, it's like, I hate violence. I don't like guns for a few reasons, largely because that's how my dad chose to end himself. But I love playing violent games where I'm shooting guns, like video games. Yeah. That's enjoyable to me. Fake violence, basically, is I differentiate, and like fake violence is fun and funny, but real violence is stupid and bad. And should only ever be the last resort, mainly just for self-defense or the defense of the defenseless.
Where we didn't have the level of fake violence that we do now.
Yeah.
And so I believe that our generation is the last one to have that clear delineation.
It's analog childhood and digital adulthood.
As opposed to 21st century digital boy, not to quote Bad Religion lyrics, but
yeah. Okay. But yeah, analog childhood, digital adulthood, and definitely. But I'm also reminded of some article about complaining about, well, what happens if we run out of trees and ink? Will they still remember how to use chalk and slate?
Much less find, mine, etc. No, we'll go back to cuneiform man. We'll draw the sticks and dirt.
Yeah. With each technological advance, there's this yearning for the way things were before.
Back when things were simple.
Yeah, and they were never simple. yeah, that's... I'm going to veer into politics, and let's try to get out of as fast as we can.
So we've done a decent job so far.
The whole idea of Make America Great Again is just... They're talking about trying to take America back to when misogyny and racism was easier to talk about.
The phrase in and of itself is not an incorrect desire. America was one of the most progressive countries on the planet for a while.
Yeah.
And if you measure by that note, it was great. And I think that's what their heads... I can't tell you. That that's what their head sees.
Okay.
But I think that's what their head sees, and they don't understand all the social ramifications of that and what has changed.
Okay.
So I don't agree.
When you say progressive, to me, I have to break that down. We were a country that was making progress. We were a country that was pushing things forward.
Technological and sociological progress.
And sociological.
It doesn't feel to me that we are right now, but I think that is what they're chasing. I can't confirm it.
Yeah.
The few people on that side of the fence I do know well enough to have a reasonable discourse with.
I believe
that they're pushing.
I would say one of the things they're not understanding is that cultural diversity and acceptance of that was one of the key elements.
Agreed.
And the reason, one of the biggest reasons that America became so great is because there was brain drain going on everywhere else, because those opportunities didn't exist everywhere else, and those opportunities did exist in America. And if we try to close that off and not let those people come in to create these amazing innovations that made this country what it was, what it could be, whatever... That's a huge mistake to close the doors.
And I do agree with you. Closing the doors is a big part of the problem. I don't think that those opportunities do exist in America
exactly.
We've closed the diversity in that realm off. That's not a cult. That's not a racial diversity. That's just the diversity of what we as a country do. And I also want to accentuate that it is long from us. I mean, you just spent a couple of years in New Zealand. There's an island just short of New Zealand called Manus. There's another one called I think it's Nauru. Either way, they're literally prison islands where they turn boats to when they're trying to emigrate into New Zealand and or Australia. And they're prison facilities. And it's not just us. I know this one intricately well because I listened to a particular Will Anderson, shout out. I listen to a particular Australian podcaster frequently. And he has a lot of people that talk about it. It's a big deal there. But it's not just us. I mean, like, a lot of the, like, all right, so France and Greece, I think, shut off immigration for a little bit. It's not just us. Oh, yeah. I may have those countries incorrect.
Absolutely. But, I was very aware in New Zealand of a lot of the politics going on.
Yeah. It's a big problem across the rest of the world, and I think that's all I had to say on that political thing. If you have something else you want to talk about, but we're going to remember we're going to try and move along quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think Cheech and Chong said it best. Things are tough all over.
They are.
Yeah. Wisdom can be found in weird places.
Steve's right here, man.
I've occasionally toyed with the idea just because my life has been so weird and I do things backwards, and sometimes it seems like as I'm just trying to process through my own shit, it bounces off of other people weird, and sometimes they can't handle it and they freak out on me and blow up at me, and I'm just like, what the fuck? I'm just trying to deal with my own shit. I'm sorry I was processing out loud. That's the biggest crime that I could figure out. I was like working through my shit and talking to them about it. And I thought that's what friends do. So, but also,
depends on the way you define friends.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that shit. I loathe talking about the weather, and it's like one of the reasons I do this. Like, who haven't I caught up with lately?
So there's this concept in some of the Native American tribes, Heyoka. They're the backwards people, the divine idiots, the living lessons. And I keep hoping I'm not one.
Living lessons is like somebody who's counting by fewer fingers every year.
They do things wrong. I can't remember all the different examples. I really need to read up on them again. But just, yeah, the idea of Jerry.
Yeah.
I think Jay ended up bringing his car around, and we were going to drive him to the mission.
Jay's car, not Jerry's, I hope.
Yeah, no, Jerry didn't have a car.
If Jerry had a car, we'd have some problems.
Yeah, that would be a weird situation. He could just sleep in his car. But I once slept the friend I was gonna when I first moved down to Eugene when I became homeless, I had a friend who I was gonna live with her ex-husband and their two kids, and I was gonna work for her at a sandwich shop she managed. When I got down here, I lost my job a week earlier than I thought I would. I ended up in Eugene. Her authority to hire got taken away from her by upper management, and the house that her husband was going to move into that had the extra room where he needed the housemate suddenly needed extra work on the floors. So I didn't have the job, I didn't have the home, and suddenly I met Lupe.
Now you've got the dog that prevents the job in the home.
And where was I coming from with that? What was the question? Which question are we on?
The last one now.
Well, what was
was the one before?
Yeah.
You were talking about... the last thing I remember that segued into this was the Cheech and Chong, things are rough all over, man.
Oh, and that was just...
I may have missed the segue between that.
Yeah,
there was another one. Paying too much attention to the story and hoping we were getting somewhere with it.
Yeah,
I'm sure we were.
The stories just kind of go out.
The endings elude me. I was telling a story the other night, because I will identify with you. I absolutely do this, get to telling a story in Louisiana. But I was going for like 40 minutes, and it had diverged so many ways, and somehow I didn't even have to stop and ask, like, where was I? what was I talking about? After like 40 minutes of straight talking, it clicked, and I brought it around in this loop that I wish I'd written down. And it's like, that was a perfectly composed piece, now that I think about it, because we laughed. There were no moments of, you know, we laughed, we lost, we did all of the emotional journey. There was no moments of...
It was, okay, it was Jerry. It was the Heyoka. I think we ended up just dropping him off at a park where he could sleep under a tree because he was drunk and he wouldn't have been able to stay at the mission. Mother wouldn't let me, is what he said. Right. I'm assuming there's a person. Well, for some reason, I think it was a man called Mother.
There's curfews as well.
Yes. But also he was drunk. And they probably have, like, if you're visibly intoxicated, we're not going to... Yeah. But the living lesson, if I don't fall flat on my face in a minute here, I'll be doing just fine. I've got a song that came out of, you know, when people ask you how you're doing, you get tired of saying the same shit every time.
I quit answering that question dishonestly.
I started saying I'm upright and I'm respirating.
Right. I know that song too. Yeah.
And yeah. And then it became a song. And, I think it goes back to, so long as I'm standing and breathing, I'm doing okay. And if people find the smallest things to complain about, we are so entitled to our convenient worlds that we forget how amazing we have it. And I mean, I don't have to go chasing an animal for 3 days just to eat. Cause,
not unless you want to.
Yeah.
And then you've paid for that opportunity.
Yeah. Although, I don't know if people should have to...
We got to regulate it somehow, or it'd be madness.
The tragedy of the commons.
Yeah.
I think is the way that's formally taught. Have you heard of that? The tragedy of the commons. That's a thing to look into. Yeah. So are we on the last question?
We can't be on the last question.
Okay, because I don't remember what that...
The last question is, what makes you similar to other people? Yeah, it's the opposite of the one I asked you earlier.
Yeah. What makes me unique? Because I'd forgot. Yeah, I don't think I ever said that anything makes me unique.
We got into it.
I started talking to somebody recently that we found out we have 30 different things, like weird little things in common. And so this is just like with this specific person, and things like we both hosted an open mic at a pizza parlor. We both went to 3 proms, 2 of them platonic. You know, like weirdly specific things, and it was just like bizarre, but it's a human to human connection, and connecting with people. What makes me similar? We all crave connections, and I think I try to connect people with people through my music. Originally, it was me trying to process, ow, this hurts. This is what I think I can do to fix it. And but I'm trying to make a shift. And it's I mean, it's all about healing. It's all about connecting. The last song that I wrote, the one that I sent to you. To reach out.
The most recent one that you said wasn't completed yet.
I finally finished it. I'm really happy with
nice.
It. I'm really excited about it. And I want to get it.
Maybe that's the one you send for me to tag.
I'll try to get a decent recording of that one.
Dropping MP3.
Because it instead of it starting off, ow, it hurts, it starts off with that first line, I love you all. And even if I haven't said. But I get so lost somewhere deep inside my head. It's just, I, My favorite friends are the ones that I don't talk to for a couple of years, and then I talk to them again, and it's like no time has passed.
Yeah, it's like it's not an effort.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. And I've seen people that are like, they get annoyed with you for having a life that didn't include them for a while. And it's, why? I'm sorry. Well,
dude, your summer was my winter for the last 2 years.
No,
like, come now.
All those Christmas songs make no sense down there.
I know, right? I know. It's an insane world.
But yeah, it's man. Yeah, it's about the connections. It's not about, and it's about the moments. What's the other line in the song? Right here and now is what's meaningful to me. What we share and how is everything that's beautiful to me. And it's about the moments. It's about and since it's about the moments, to bring it back a little bit full circle again, it's about being kind in those moments. And one of the things that I learned about kindness, I think it fits together. It was actually mentioned as a way to be happier in your life. It's be grateful and express gratitude. And so being grateful for the time that you get to share. I started trying to just, when I see somebody, when I spend time with them, I'm just grateful for that time with them. And I don't like, since I'm against the us versus them thing, we're all us and everybody is family, and there's, you don't have to choose to not connect with people just because of something superficial. We all want to connect. And we all want to be safe and secure. And I think connecting is a way that we can ensure our safety and security and others' safety and security. Instead of trying to compete for resources, all the competition. I hate that competition. It makes me tense. Because it doesn't, it's not necessary.
It is necessary for technological progress.
One of my favorite authors is Spider Robinson. And he has a series, I think it's called Death Killer. And in it, somebody manages to technologically create telepathy. And he gives it away. And people put on this headband, and they join this group mind, basically.
Free source telepathy now.
Yeah. And so, as time goes by, you know, the mind becomes healthy. You know, it's a positive force. And it doesn't force anybody to be part of it. But eventually, humanity just all joins the mind. And since they're no longer competing, they can really work and really create amazing things. And maybe like one group will work on the same thing as another group, but it won't be because it won't be so like they'll get to win or anything. It'll be just so we think this idea works. We think that idea works. And then, you know, that kind of competition, I'm all for that. But like competition in art, that just, I hate those America's...
No more Oscars.
The X Factor and...
whoever's next top model and who has the voice. And
It's just horrifying. It's art. It's subjective.
I've seen those shows too. Subjective. Well put work. Especially next to art in relation to those shows.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some talented performances on those.
Yes.
But
I've also seen some rather questionable things.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there are some people who should not necessarily be performing in front of other people.
At least not the way they're doing.
I hosted an open mic for 3 years, and there was our elder friend, once again, was there a lot, and he had very pointed things to say to me in private, because he was kind.
Right.
And just like, they should stay in their garage. Their friends need to be honest with them.
And tell them that they might be okay at guitar, but the singing has got to go.
Exactly. That's one of the interesting things that I see a lot is, and that's one of the things I did backwards. All these guys work really hard on playing guitar, and they're amazing guitarists. But as soon as they start singing, I just want to leave the room. I studied voice. That was where I came from. And I struggled as a guitarist because I didn't pick up the guitar until I was 30. And instead of learning cover songs on guitar to teach myself guitar, I taught myself guitar by writing my own songs on the guitar.
That was my problem.
And and so it was... I still don't consider myself a very good guitarist, but that's why I work with a piano player who has the musical the instrumental complexity that I lack. I do rhythms. I wrote a song to teach myself how to play one string at a time. I've got a couple songs where I do some
sort of picking stuff. Doing it, yeah.
Pushing myself out of my comfort zone. Similarities. We're talking about similarities now. Yeah. I want comfort and I want convenience. I want housing and food security. But everybody wants these things, and it's one of the things that should remind us that we're all in the same boat. We're all on the same rock hurtling through the sky. And we don't know if we're alone. I love the Fermi paradox. Are you familiar with that?
No, not top of my head.
Given the vastness of the universe, there should be other life out there.
Well, that comes...
But where are they?
That comes in the Drake equation, which is you assess... That life is most likely, or at least life that we will understand, is most likely carbon-based, which means it has to be in a hydrogen-rich atmosphere, which means we start looking at relatively cool or moderate or cool stars, much like our own, that are going to create an ecosphere without their solar system, and then you pinpoint down to, and it's still a bunch of fucking pseudoscience and guesswork, but it's scientifically built pseudoscience.
With the Hubble Deep Field, we learned that the universe is much, much vaster than we thought.
Oh, it's more than we can even imagine.
And so, just given the vastness of it, those conditions should exist countless times over. So the Fermi paradox is, given the vastness, where are they? And one of the things that comes out of that is the concept of the great filter. So... as a species gains intelligence and sentience, something stops them from escaping their planet, from achieving a technology that takes them beyond their star, that kind of thing. Or at least communicating beyond their star. But given that we don't understand the universe, even a fraction...
not necessarily.
It could be something along the lines of, it just isn't possible to actually, there is no way to create a technology that will take, other than something like a generation ship, if you're familiar with that concept,
yes.
where they
you
send
have to
out.
Rebirth the race on the ship whilst in travel.
Yeah, so giant colony ships. Yeah, so, go ahead.
Either way, the Fermi equation...
either way, we don't know if we're alone in the universe. And if we aren't, and if you really want to, like, think about that us versus them thing.
Which us and which them?
We should consider humans as us.
there is some thought that Earth being brought under attack by an alien force
would
could
be the
possibly
thing
that, be the only thing that will truly unite the human race.
Yeah.
And even then, temporarily.
I like the idea that there is this galactic or universal civilization that keeps itself hidden. And they're just waiting for us to figure our shit out.
And then they'll come say hi.
And then they'll say, okay, here's your membership card.
Now that you've learned to care for the rock that you're living on.
Exactly.
And the other people that you're living on it with.
And the animals. You know, we forget that we are animals. And that we...
Language affords us that, though. We've built it that way.
So... What if we could... let other species achieve sentience? What if we're supposed to be taking care of these other species and encouraging them towards?
I don't know that that's in the cards, but I do believe, and I know for a fact, that other animals do have sentient knowledge of themselves that we, for many years, due to lack of understanding, didn't know.
Yeah.
But... for instance, read an experiment just the other day. They'd taken a number of ants, and on a handful of them, they put dots, a colored dot on their body, and put them in front of mirrors. And the ants with dots, most of them reacted trying to get the dot off of them, which proves that they have some kind of self-awareness. Ants.
Because they used to say
that... And the largest, one of the most understood hive mind colonies, although hive mind comes directly from a beehive, but... I mean, beehives have revolutions. That's how queens get replaced. They kill the queen or kick the queen out, and they build a new queen.
Huh.
Things I learned while being a beekeeper.
Yeah. I will never be a beekeeper.
On that note, I think we may have just found a good place to close this. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
This was fun.
I enjoy it. But yeah, thank you.
You.
Hey folks, it's Tyler again. Thank you again for being with me for a whole year. I really appreciate it. I hope that this means somewhere near as much to you as it does to me and helps you feel as much connectivity as it does me. And because Jeremy is such an amazing vocalist and songwriter, I'm going to leave you with a song that makes me even happier that I kept this for the last episode of this year. That's not the last episode ever. You will get more. That also doesn't mean you'll get the second question, group of questions next week. So, and that note, folks, let's roll Jeremy's theme music.
Tell them that I Inquire.